This is the SearchSecurity.com Threat Monitor Podcast for November 18th, 2010. In these semi-monthly recordings, SearchSecurity.com contributors offer expert advice on the latest information security threats. I'm Greg Smith. Today's podcast is an audio excerpt from an exclusive video on SearchSecurity.com. In this video presentation, noted author and security researcher Robert R. Snake Hansen discusses real attacks and top threats against Web 2.0 platforms. Hansen's presentation is aimed at helping CISOs strike the balance between security and the business proposition for these tools. It covers how to reduce the risk of data loss or reputational harm and current threats as they relate to Web 2.0 technology, plus how attackers are already monetizing these infrastructures and detailed mitigation techniques for enterprises. And now for this week's edition of Threat Monitor, an audio excerpt from Web 2.0 Threats Illustrated, presented by Robert R. Snake Hansen.
Before we get started, I wanted to briefly talk about what the same origin policy is. For those of you who are not aware, this is the most important thing your browser does to protect you. It is a fundamental across all browsers. Every single browser has this origin policy built into it, but most people don't know what it is. So imagine that everything before that slash is pretty much the most important part of a URL as far as your browser is concerned. Once you talk about after the slash, it stops being as granular and clear about what it does. But essentially, one website, yourdomain.com, should not be able to read some other website's content using the browser. The browser should have that kind of clear delineation between those two places. And if that were ever to break down, then the security internet would sort of fall apart and bad guys would be able to read what's going on in your bank, for instance. So it would be bad. It turns out that this is broken in many, many different ways, and that's what I'm going to be talking about. But sometimes it's not always about reading content from other domains. Sometimes it's about writing content to other domains. So we'll talk about that. That's called cross-site request forgery. So what happens is some bad guy puts up a little website, and they maybe have a little image tag or something, and that points to some other domain. Maybe it's an image, maybe it's an iframe, CSS, JavaScript, anything that's embedded content that can call another domain. And it makes this request to this other domain using your browser. So your browser makes a request for this image or this style or whatever on another website. The problem is that's doing it while you're authenticated. So you're doing it with your bank account, and now it's transferring money because you are authenticated. You are the one making that request. So the bad guy's essentially getting you to do something on their behalf by virtue of visiting this website. It's very difficult for a bank to tell what the difference between a good request and a bad request is, so they have to build something in called nonces, which I'll talk about in a bit. But essentially, the same origin policy breaks down when you're talking about writing cross-domain. You're allowed to read cross-domain, or you're not allowed to read cross-domain, that's forbidden, but you are allowed to write cross-domain. You can send any data you want to any other domain from any other website. A lot of people think, for some reason, that GET and POSTs are some, you shouldn't use GET, you should use POST or something for this. It really doesn't matter. There are some instances that are very, very specific instances where that can help you a little bit, but don't think about it that way. That is not at all going to help you. The real thing you need to do is build nonces, which we'll talk about in a second. This affects nearly every website on Earth. Banks, .govs, .mils, whatever. Every website that has a form is going to be vulnerable to this unless it does something to protect itself. So you have to proactively protect yourself. It's not something you get for free because you're using a browser. So how most people think about cross-site request forgery mitigation, first they say, check the referrer. If the referrer isn't coming from the bank, then I'm going to throw it away, right? If it's not coming from my website, I didn't initiate that request. So the first thing the bad guy does is they turn off from referring URL. So they use things like MetaRefresh, HTTPS, or JavaScript to basically write that content, and they essentially get rid of the referring URL. So you're saying, well, I'll check for no referring URLs, but that doesn't work either because there's a lot of security software that's benign that tries to protect people by removing all referring URLs. So you really can't use that. So next they say, okay, we'll use a nonce. And a nonce just means a one-time number. So they'll put in this crazy long thing in a hidden variable that you won't be able to see, and because I can't read cross-domain as an attacker, I shouldn't be able to see this nonce. So when you submit that data to the next page, you're submitting this one-time token. It works for you, it doesn't work for me because I don't know that one-time token. So that's the way that most people fix this problem because it actually works. So an attacker at this point needs to either steal this nonce from your browser in some way, or they need to get you to click on that link for them and perform the action on the attacker's behalf. So there's one other way that people try to protect themselves from this, and that's using like a flash movie. They'll embed the link or whatever inside of a flash movie and say, well, that's even more protected because it's in a different domain even than the one that might have an exploit on it. So again, you know, essentially I just need to steal that same data or get someone to click on it. So let's talk about how to do that.
Get more advice on Web 2.0 threats from Robert R. Snake Hansen after a quick word from searchsecurity.com.
Outward-facing web applications have become a favorite target of malicious hackers. Very few of them are as secure as you think. So how can you make sure your web apps are sufficiently secured? Check out our exclusive Web Application Attack Security Guide. It offers tactical advice on preventing everything from buffer overflows to SQL injection to DDoS attacks. Don't let your web applications get pwned. Visit searchsecurity.com/webappattacks to learn more. That's searchsecurity.com/webappattacks.
So the easiest way for an attacker to steal stuff is in JavaScript space. JavaScript runs in your browser. You're connected to your own bank. The JavaScript runs in your bank on your bank website. But how do you get it there? So let's assume there's like an input on the page. So this would be something like you type in your credit card number or something in a typical input box just like this. And it would put, $variable is where that content lives. So let's say you errored out, you know, mistyped something, and it pops open the page again. It's going to return whatever's inside that variable. Let's assume that that variable equals this thing. I assume that the font's a little weird, but just say it's a end, quote, end angle bracket, script alert, blah, 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 blah. So basically, this is running JavaScript on the web page because it essentially turns it into this. It essentially stops the encapsulation of the value and of the input tag and creates JavaScript running on the page. This is very simple, just creates an alert box, nothing special about it. But in a normal situation, they do something like steal your cookies or create a fake web page that you type in your username and password into, and it would send it off to the bad guy. Anything that a bank could do in JavaScript space, a bad guy can do in JavaScript space if it's vulnerable to this, just about. So here's a good example, exactly the example I have above. This is a live, I was working when I tried it, military website that is vulnerable to cross-site scripting. You're thinking, oh my God, why am I putting on this? But this is already on the internet, and many, many, many people know about this. This is not unique in any shape or form. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of examples of this sitting out on the internet that bad guys know about, that they're either using or talking about because they're good examples of what they're looking for. We know in our own testing, and it's also backed up by a lot of automated scanners who do a lot more broad-scale scans than we do, that about 80% of sites are vulnerable. And we think that that's actually not true. We think it's actually higher, but it's always hard to say 100% or 90% or something because people start freaking out about those numbers. But let's just call it 80% just to be safe. 80% of websites that are dynamic tend to be vulnerable to cross-site scripting.
That concludes this week's edition of SearchSecurity.com's Threat Monitor podcast. As always, you can also download more of our podcasts by visiting SearchSecurity.com/podcast. Thanks for listening.